And here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us, hopefully very, very soon, Mr. Paul Williams, who has been a professor teaching at Eastern universities. He is a consultant to the intelligence agencies. He's written a couple of books, which we carry. One is called Osama's Revenge. The other is called The Al-Qaeda Connection. And actually, we think both of these are very important books. It'll give you some idea into the background of the mentality of the people who are within this Islamic movement that threatens the very structure of American society today. Now, we can go into the background, and those of you who've listened to our programs regularly know that we feel that certainly through the years, why many times this radical Islamic movement had help from our own intelligence agencies, but that was then and now is now. And the question is there a threat to America? Well, this last weekend I happened to be at a meeting in another state where there were a number of people gathered. Some of them were experts. One of them works in the White House. And I had the opportunity to ask him what we were going to do to stop Iran from getting nuclear weapons. And as he danced around the subject, it was very obvious we're considering going to war with Iran. There was a gentleman there from the Project for the New American Century, this small group of 25 people who really controlled the background to our foreign policy. And those of you who don't know the Project for the New American Century, I suggest you go to their website at newamericancentury.org. That's newamericancentury.org. And read all of the material that they have there if you don't have access to the information. We do have a packet on the New American Century we can make available to you if you're interested. And you can always call us at 1-800-544-8927. But this gentleman, I simply asked, would we be at war with Iran within 12 months? And after dancing around the subject and saying, well, we'd really like to try to avoid war, maybe we could topple the government. But it was very obvious that war is being seriously considered. Well, with that as a background, we want to get to our special guest this evening because he's really an expert on what's going on. He studied the Al-Qaeda movement. He studied Osama bin Laden. He's really one of the world's leading experts on Osama. And we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, this evening. Paul Williams. Good evening, Mr. Williams. How are you tonight?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. I'm fine. Thank you.
Well, of course, fascinating. One of the things that was brought up, I'd never heard of this before, but I've often wondered why it is that the president of Iran appears to be doing everything possible to provoke an attack, an Israeli attack, an American attack, almost to justify the feelings of many people in the West that we're going to have to do something about the totally irresponsible people in Iran because we couldn't allow them to have the finger on a nuclear trigger. And somebody had mentioned some sort of a sect over there, almost like a doomsday sect, belief in this idea that the only way we're really going to bring the Mahdi back, the leader of the Muslim world, is to bring about a cataclysmic war. Yeah. Are you acquainted with that philosophy?
Oh, sure I am. Sure I am. It's an ideology and a belief that's inherent in the Shiite movement. The return of the prophet after the death of the last righteous prophet, who was the fourth caliph of Islam. So yeah, and they're looking forward to the Mahdi, and the Mahdi will come, of course, from the family of the prophet. He will be a figure from the end time. He will have a prominent nose. He will be a figure who will be who will unite both the Sunnis and the Shiites and all the Muslims in one great jihad against the West, and he'll bring forth a day of Islam. Osama bin Laden now is calling himself Osama Mohammed bin Laden, so he's starting to identify himself with the Mahdi.
And I think for our listeners out there, the Mahdi would be he would be the leader of the Muslim world. He would be sort of the Christian, like Jesus Christ to the Jew, the Messiah to the Hindu, Maitreya. They honestly believe that they can bring this about, at least what I'm told, that they're going to have cataclysmic events to actually precipitate his return. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, that is a fair statement. Yeah, and once again, from Iran right now, that's exactly what we're hearing. You know, more and more and more about the return of the last prophet and preparations for the Mahdi. And I mean that's, we're involved, as you know, Dr. Stan, in a religious war, and it's kind of mind-boggling that these events are taking place in our time, in the age of the so-called post-Christian era.
Hold that thought there for just a moment. Sure. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and with us is Paul Williams. Paul was simply saying, as you know, he's been a professor. He lectures to intelligence people. He's a consultant for our various intelligence agencies. He is a prolific writer, having written two books we carry and we recommend. One, Osama's Revenge. The other, The Al-Qaeda Connection. Both of them just packed full of all sorts of fascinating information. But we were just talking about the Shia Muslim belief there will be coming a Mahdi. The Mahdi would be the Christian, the return of Jesus Christ. To the Egyptian, the Mahdi would be the return of the Prophet. But before he's going to come, there's going to be terrible cataclysmic events and times. The tragedy is that many of these people believe that they're going to have to create these terrible times to bring the Mahdi back. And of course, Osama bin Laden apparently has been calling himself Osama Mohammed bin Laden, mm-hmm. identifying himself with Muhammad the Prophet. So with that as a background, pick this story up there, because I think it's so vitally important for our listeners to understand we're not dealing with rational people.
Well, right now, the followers of bin Laden are greeting him when they see him. And we know this from the night letters that are being circulated throughout Pakistan. They greet him and they speak to him as the awaited enlightened one. That's a title that can only be bestowed upon the Mahdi. And the Mahdi in Shia belief is more than a mighty warrior or even a religious leader. He is the rightly guided caliph, the last caliph, who will appear in the last days of human history. And his coming is foretold by the Hadith, the collection of sacred writings that supplement the Quran. And in such writings, he's depicted as a prophet who will appear at a time when the Muslims are oppressed, Dr. Stan, throughout the world. And he will unite all the believers to fight off the vast army of the oppressors, the army of the infidel unbelievers, who will be led, according to their belief, by the Dabbath, or the beast, And he will unite all of the Muslims in war and bring forth the day of Islam. And that's a day when people throughout the world, believers and non-believers alike, will all fall in forced submission before the will of Allah. And at that point, after the day of Islam, justice will be restored, according to these people, throughout the world through the imposition of Sharia on all nations. And like I said, the Mahdi will be descendant of Muhammad through his daughter Fatima. He will have the same name as the Prophet, and that's why Osama is calling himself Osama Mohammed bin Laden. He'll have certain distinctive features, a prominent nose, which Osama, of course, has, a black mole on his face, which Osama, of course, has. He'll be known for his generosity and his altruism, and these are characteristics of Osama bin Laden, at least according to his followers. He'll arise from Arabia, from Saudi Arabia, no other Muslim land, and that's where bin Laden is from. And he'll be called from a cave by Allah to serve as a savior for all believers. And once again, you know, if you fit all the pieces together, you can see the way that that the followers of Osama believe that he is the Mahdi, and you can see how this resurgence of the belief in the Mahdi has taken hold of the leaders and the mullahs in Iran, and that's, believe it or not, that's really what's happening.
Yeah, and of course the thing is that the people in the West really don't understand that the whole Muslim world is uniting in opposition specifically to Israel and America, the great Satan. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, Dr. Stan, as you know, there are 1 billion Muslims in the world. 3/4 of them, according to surveys conducted by Gallup, by Pew, the leading polls throughout the world show that 3/4 of them support the jihad and have a virulent hatred of the United States.
And of course, it wasn't this way a few years ago. You know, back in 1991, I think there was a lot of goodwill towards America after the 9/11 attack. But all of that has changed, hasn't it?
It has changed radically. It changed. It began to change, and that's a good date to bear in mind. You know, the Persian Gulf War, when Saddam Hussein acquiesced, he believes, Kuwait. He believes that Kuwait gave him the shaft during the Iran-Iraq War, that he protected the Arab nations and got nothing in return. And he was correct there. And the Kuwaitis were stealing Iraqi oil and selling it, and he just moved in and he acquiesced and annexed Kuwait as part of Iraq. That started the Persian Gulf War. Of course, we became involved there for some unknown reason to me. It was a matter that strictly concerned the Arab nations. We became involved, and after that, we imposed sanctions on Iraq, which resulted in, according to the Muslims, the deaths of millions of Iraqi children and women and old people. It imposed incredible hardship on them. And all these things, of course, added a great deal of fire to the jihad.
And, of course, it's really, we have to ask, why did we do what we have done? There's a wonderful book written by Bob Woodward. I think it's called Six Presidents. Mm-hmm. And there, of course, he describes a meeting held in the Oval Office with Brett Scowcroft, James Baker III, George Herbert Walker Bush, and Colin Powell. Baker wanted to go over and tell Saddam Hussein, you got to get out of Kuwait. If you don't get out of Kuwait, we're going to be forced to come and get you out. But get out now while you can. And of course, George Herbert Walker Bush is professed to have said, according to Bob Woodward, no, you can't go. You can't negotiate with Saddam Hussein. We have to have this war. We have to have this war. Anybody would like to see those pages from the book, we'd be glad to send them. But why would you have to have the war? Why would you have to have the war back in 1991? And now, of course, here we are engaged in a war in Iraq, but the war drags on, and now we're talking about going to war with Iran, and none of this makes any logical sense unless there are other forces out there that are simply dragging us into this great confrontation with the Islamic world.
Dr. Stern, think about this. In 1991, why in the world did we send troops into Saudi Arabia, set up military installations between Mecca and Medina? That was against every tenet of Islam. That really stirred the pot to the boiling point. That's if you read the fatwa from Osama bin Laden, that was it. The installation of those permanent military facilities in Saudi land, in the land of the prophets, where nobody can live, of course. Nobody can be a citizen unless you're a Saudi. You can't be buried there unless you're a Saudi. You can't be a citizen unless you're a Saudi. You can't own a business there unless you're a Saudi. or even invest in a business there unless you're a Saudi. And yet we received all the warning signs that this was going to cause havoc. And yet George Walker Bush installed the military installations between the two holy cities, and that certainly added a great deal to the unrest that we're experiencing right now. But if you go back and you look at that situation in 1991, Dr. Stan, what were we doing? I mean, why did we go to war at that time? And I think, the only answer is, I mean, Saddam Hussein became presented as somebody worse than Hitler. He was accused of taking babies from hospitals, premature babies, and killing them. Later we found out that all these things were untrue. Saddam Hussein, as you know, and going back to 1980, was our ally. We supported him in the Iran-Iraq war. We gave him weapons. We propped him up. He was the savior of the Arab nations during the Iran-Iraq war. Saudi Arabia, all the Arab states supported him. At the end of the war, these Arab states demanded that he return all the money that they loaned him, plus an interest. They would not allow him to get a fair price on his own oil. They forced him into this situation where he had to react militarily. And we took action against Saddam Hussein only to make sure that the cheap oil would continue to flow into the United States from the Saudis. That's the only reason. No other reason.
Well, of course, all the things are coming together as we're facing the specter of a war with Iran. Now, of course, we just don't have enough troops to militarily attack that country. In fact, if we were to attack using missiles and certainly cruise missiles, Tomahawk, planes, bombing, why, they could send some Iranian divisions into the southern part of Iraq and make it literally impossible for us to get out. They could create terrible havoc there, couldn't they? And that shouldn't be welcomed by the Shia Muslims.
It gets worse than that. In order to take out their facilities in Iran right now, the nuclear facilities, we would not only have to rely on Tomahawk missiles and Stingers and things like that, we'd have to employ some tactical nukes. I mean, that even came up in the Pentagon. And worse, there are over 200 sites throughout Iran that would require elimination. 200 sites, and they're scattered all over the place. So it's not like the Israelis taking out the nuclear facility in Iraq in 1981.
Would there be an awful lot of civilians killed as well?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, we are in a literally an impossible situation. The average American doesn't really realize what the implications of this are. But if you want to inflame the entire Islamic world against the United States, you couldn't do a better job than we're doing right now. However, those of you who think that we're going to be able to sit over here comfortably without anything to be concerned about really need to read Paul Williams' book, The Al-Qaeda Connection. And we'll be getting into that in here in just a moment or two, as we discuss the sleeper agents who are being welcomed into this country through our southern borders. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Paul Williams. And we were going to talk about the Al-Qaeda connection, about the Islamic men who are being allowed to come into our country across our southern border. And I really thought that really would be so fascinating. I was reading the section in your book today that talked about all of the people of special interest, these people who've been arrested down, trying to come into this country, and then promptly released. And the border agents down there, when they see these Arabs coming in, all with the same trim of the mustache, all wearing the same clothing, all speaking in Arabic, sneaking into our country, violating our laws, and they are apprehended, and then they are given a court hearing, and 95% of them never show up for the court hearing for deportation. And the agents on the border are saying, why are we bothering to stop them if we're ordered to let them loose? I would ask you the same question. Why are we even trying to stop the Islamic people, from many of them from terrorist countries, from coming into this country if our federal government orders that they immediately be released?
The situation, I've been there. Let me just tell you, like in Cochise County in Arizona, along that border with Mexico, right now, the people that are coming over, of course, create a mess. I mean, they litter the countryside like you wouldn't believe. But among the litter, the mounds and mounds of litter, on any given day, you will find Islamic prayer mats, you will find Arabic newspapers, you will find paid text from Arabic books. It's really a frightening situation. Since 2004, over 9,000 special interest aliens from terror-related countries, have been apprehended at the border. Caught. How many weren't caught? Only heaven knows. But as soon as they're caught, Dr. Stan, they're placed in hotels. I mean, very comfortable hotels. They're given hearing dates to appear before an immigration judge. None of them show up for their hearing. I mean, they all just disappear into the heartland, and that's the end of it. But why they are apprehended, I don't know. It makes absolutely no sense. There's one woman, her name was Farida Ghulam. She was apprehended in 2004 in Texas. She traveled to an Al-Qaeda cell in New York City, boarded a plane in Texas, flew to New York, went back to Texas. She was visiting that cell to convey information about the next 9/11. When the Border Patrol arrested her in Texas, finally arrested her, she talked about flying from South Africa. She made her way from South Africa, from Saudi Arabia, flew from there to Mexico and crossed the Rio Grande. And they asked her how many times she had done that. And they thought, well, if she did it two or three times, it would be alarming. Well, Farida Ghulam did not make this trip two or three times, not even 10 or 20 times. She had made that crossing in the last 5 years over 275 times before she was apprehended.
So she was doing it on a regular basis. Actually, she was a courier then. Whatever happened to you? Do you have any idea what happened?
Yeah, I know exactly what happens to them. They're placed at various detention facilities. There's some in Eastern Europe, as we know, but there are many detention facilities that the CIA has set up throughout the United States. There's one, as a matter of fact, in my backyard.
All right, hold that thought. We're going to be right back here in just a moment as we discuss this incredible story with Mr. Paul Williams. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Paul Williams, and we're talking about what's happening to our southern border, and Paul was simply mentioning that since 2004, over 9,000 people of interest. These would be Arab nationalists, but most of them, or many of them, from countries that support terrorism, have been apprehended on the border. They're put in comfortable hotels. They held an initial hearing, told to come back for a deportation hearing, and essentially none of them come back. Now, if we've apprehended 9,000 since 2004, probably there are tens of thousands more that have gotten in, have never been apprehended. And the thing is, why would you, people who could potentially be terrorists, most of the Mexicans coming in here are looking for work, but the Arabs who are coming in illegally across our southern border, some of them certainly are here as part of Al-Qaeda, setting up their sleeper cells, waiting for when the word is given for the attack on the United States. So why would you give them deportation hearing, a notification to come back, when they're not coming back? And I'm sure many of the agents working on the border are asking exactly that same question. And then Paul was telling a story about a woman who had actually was a courier. She had made almost 250 trips across the border. She was coming from Islamic countries, bringing information into the terror cells. And do you say that she is now being confined in one of these prisons somewhere in the world?
Oh, yeah. You see, the federal facilities right now, there's one, as I said, in northeast Pennsylvania, where several of these operatives are right now. They're held up in federal prisons throughout the country. And, they're given, but they're, which is, this is kind of amazing. And many of these facilities are, they become part of the general population, and they're talking. And, you know, if you know any guards at any of these facilities, you'd be amazed at the type of prisoners that are in, you know, many of these federal prisons right now, Al-Qaeda agents. But the woman I spoke about, Farida Ghulam, yeah, she's in a federal pen in the United States right now. I know where she is.
All right, fine. Well, of course, now, do you think that they're setting up Al-Qaeda cells all across America for the time when we go to war with Iran?
Dr. Stan, the people that have crossed the border, let's just look at this. Your listeners can verify this for themselves. Just go to their search engines, type in special interest aliens, or SIAs, and they'll get oodles of Google information. They could read for weeks and weeks and weeks, and they'll find that what we're talking about is the gospel truth. Over 9,000 in the last, since 2004 to the middle of 2005, and I'm taking this up recently, were apprehended and given hearing gates and disappeared. How many, these people, you gotta realize, they're coming from places like Kuwait. They're coming from places like Saudi Arabia. If they're coming from Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, they're people who have some money. I mean, they're not traveling to Mexico and making that trek over the border to pluck chickens or to work in a fast food restaurant or to pick some crops. I'm sorry, that's not the reason they're here at all. They're not dressed up like Mexicans so they can be migrant workers. They're here for some other reason.
And, Chris, we are actually giving large sums of money to Pakistan that has, I think, some, last thing I've read, about 55 terrorist training camps in it where Al-Qaeda terrorists are being trained today. And we're giving $660 million a year to Pakistan. Isn't there something wrong with that picture?
Well, let's take that a step further. How about all the Al-Qaeda training camps that still exist in Afghanistan, right in front of our troops? How about the poppy fields that are red right now and ripe for picking? I mean, we could firebomb them in one afternoon and do away with the funding for the jihad. But right now where our troops are, the heroin crops are flourishing as never before. The cultivation has increased threefold since Operation Enduring Freedom.
Now, why, in heaven's name, if we're really involved in a war with Islamic terrorism, are we allowing, of course, the poppy industry to persist, allowing, of course, Al-Qaeda to get the profits from that and sell it throughout the world, not only having a profound impact on the people of Europe and the United States, but acquiring the funds to fund the Islamic terrorist movement?
Well, the argument about that is if we firebombed or if we spread herbicides on that crop, the Afghan economy would collapse, which would mean havoc for the present government. You know, the government that we propped up there.
That sounds like a pretty good explanation. But when we're at war, when America is being threatened, you would think that we'd be more interested in stopping the funding for Al-Qaeda, wouldn't you?
We don't have any leadership, Dr. Stan. That's a problem.
We'll be back here in just a moment here with Paul Williams, his book, The Al-Qaeda Connection, and, of course, Osama's Revenge, both of which we carry, both of which you really need to read to get a grasp of what lies ahead here in America. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, one of the things that I've been rather loath to believe is that there really was going to be any more terrorist attacks in America. After all, it's been over 4 years, and there's not been a serious terrorist attack here in the United States. But after reading Paul's book and looking at his documentation, I have no question that Osama has been out there trying to acquire enriched uranium and other materials for building at least small tactical nuclear weapons. Osama is a brilliant individual. He's a trained engineer, and many of the Arabs really are highly trained. They're very capable. They are entirely capable of building a small nuclear weapon. They're not that complicated, but what you need is the enriched uranium. So would you like to pick up the story of there, how they've been working for really well over a decade, and to acquire this the nuclear material?
When Osama bin Laden moved to Sudan in 1992, he made his first score of highly enriched uranium. It came from a facility in Pretoria. From that time, he has been actively buying off-the-shelf nukes. He's been buying highly enriched uranium and plutonium to manufacture his own nuclear devices. And he has been involved in these undertakings, as you said, from the time he was in the Sudan in 1992 to the time he returned to Afghanistan in 1996 to 9/11. He has a small arsenal of nuclear weapons that he intends to use against the United States. He has said that. His lieutenants have said that. That has been verified by everybody that looked into this. What Daniel Pearl was put, you know, that's the reason he died. He was looking at the connection between Osama bin Laden and Dr. A.Q. Khan and the Al-Qaeda nuclear arsenal. There's no doubt that Osama bin Laden has nuclear weapons. And on October the 11th, 2001, at the checkpoint at Ramallah, an Al-Qaeda operative was arrested with a backpack nuke strapped to his back. In the beginning, the Mossad thought it was a radiological device, but later discovered, and this was reported in newspapers throughout the world, that it was a tactical nuclear weapon capable of destroying all of Israel.
Now, what was the date of that?
October 11th, 2001, 1 month after 9/11. Reported on United Press International. There's another story that was written by Richard Sales. Richard Sales, by the way, is not only a very prominent and award-winning journalist for AP and UPI, he was also a CIA operative.
All right, well, just hang on, and we'll be back in just a moment here as we begin to explore what the implications are of nuclear weapons in the hands of Al-Qaeda terrorists. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we're trying to point out that we're living in very, very perilous times, and a lot of things really don't seem to make any sense unless there are other forces at work that most people don't understand. And, of course, my contention, and I believe that Mr. Williams would agree with me, there are powerful spiritual forces that are at work as we are being moved towards some end-time scenarios. So, but let's get back. Mr. Williams was talking about how in October of 2001, a young man wearing a backpack was stopped at an Israeli checkpoint as he was trying to enter Israel. They actually were able to get the backpack away from him, and it contained a small tactical nuclear device. Well, I'll tell you what, when you're in Israel, why, you don't have to have a very large device to kill off or to destroy a large part of the country, because it's such a small country.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually found that in 2001. But the major danger to America would be small tactical nuclear devices. Now, we do know that during the Cold War, while the Russians built large numbers of suitcase bombs, but so did the United States. But the technology is certainly there for small tactical weapons of 50, 75, what, 100 pounds, somewhere there?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, there's sometimes people refer to these as suitcase nukes. They're not necessarily suitcase nuclear devices. Some of them can be formed into artillery shells and fired from like a 155 millimeter recoilless rifle mounted on a Jeep or from a howitzer. Some of them are mines. Some of them are backpack nukes. Matter of fact, most of the small tactical nuclear weapons that we used in the U.S. military and continue to deploy are called SADMS. And they were strapped to, they were called Davy Crockett's. And they were strapped to, like backpacks. They were fitted in backpacks. And they were used by the Navy SEALs, and they still are. They weighed about 60 pounds, as you say. You could parachute out of a plane, a SEAL could, land in the ocean, strap one to a bridge or to a port, and detonate it. And these have been around since the 1960s for a very long time. As a matter of fact, in the Soviet Museum in Moscow, the smallest nuclear device known to man is on exhibit, and it's the size of a fountain pen.
So, of course, the question is, Could they bring them in the United States? Would they bring them into the United States? Or are they already here, ready to be deployed when the word is given?
Well, according to Time Magazine. I mean, we could talk about any Newsweek, Time, The Nation. I'll tell you one story. There was a Waziristan summit in 2004. At the end of that summit, and that was to discuss the next 9/11, according to the New York Times, the Washington Post, Time, and Newsweek, one operative, Al Masri, his name was collared. And he spoke about nuclear weapons that had been developed by Al-Qaeda and forward deployed to Mexico. And he said that these weapons had been successfully transported over the border. And I mean, anyone that doubts that, there's a story of Adnan El-Shukrijama, who's the next Muhammad Atta. He intended that was your stand summit. He was trained in nuclear technology at McMaster's University in Hamilton, Ontario. Following that, Bolo came out, be on the lookout for Adnan El-Shukrijama. A $5 million reward was placed on his head by Attorney General Ashcroft and FBI Director Robert Mueller. Adnan El-Shukrijama traveled from Hamilton, Ontario to Buffalo. From Buffalo, he made his way to Denver. He was spotted at a Denny's restaurant there. From there, he made his way across the border into Mexico, down to Central America, where he met with jefes from Mara Salvatrucha, an El Salvadoran street gang. From that point on, he was seen in Sonora, Mexico, where he stole, according to the Mexican officials, a Piper crop duster. But at the scene of the crime, he was seen loading some very suspicious crates, which people now believe were these nuclear weapons, onto this crop duster. And he was last seen in Bakersfield, California. As a matter of fact, Dr. Stan, I have reason to believe, and I received notification of this today and verification, that he's still there.
Well, if he's still there, why don't we pick him up?
Let me tell you something. I called up. Now, you have to realize, I worked for the FBI for years. Not only did I work for the FBI, but I appeared as a leading witness at many of the pizza trials. I put many of the leading mafiosos in the slammer. I mean, I was a star witness. I not only worked behind a desk, I was working day and night with the FBI. One time I was taken into a warehouse, and my head was smashed like a melon on the concrete floor, so I lost most of my hearing. But in any case, the FBI knows me, and they know my work, and they know that what I say, if I'm putting people in the slammer, what I say is accurate. I never write anything without a footnote, as you know. They know that my information is salient. They know that I would never give a bad piece of information to anyone, especially about a matter this serious. I inform the authorities what's going on in Bakersfield right now, and I have yet to hear from them. And this goes on all the time.
And I think that if you look and see what's going on today, none of it really makes sense unless there are other forces at work within the FBI and certainly within our intelligence agencies.
But what will these forces be doing, Dr. Stan? That's what I don't understand.
I think that they're allowing this to take place.
Why? I agree with you, but I know what you're saying is right. And in the beginning, I didn't believe that, and I couldn't believe that about why are they doing this? Another thing, let me tell you something else that verifies what you say all the time. I was a newspaper man. I've won newspaper awards up the gazoo. I'm the only Pennsylvania newspaper reporter who won three first place Keystone Press awards in three different categories in the same year. So I have a lot of contacts with newspaper people throughout the country. I was the editor and publisher of a newspaper. There's an old newspaper man I know and respect very much from California, who was in contact with the smuggler who was transporting aliens over the border. And the smuggler told him about transporting nukes over the border and that he was willing to talk to the FBI. I reported this to Customs. I reported this to several congressmen. I reported this to law enforcement sources. That guy, this is, I'm going back now 9 months. That guy has yet to be contacted. Why?
Well, it's sort of the same thing. The gentleman, one of the original hijackers, 9/11 hijackers, actually defected to the FBI back in April of the year 2000. We actually have the testimony before the Joint Select Committee on that. And he went into the FBI office in Newark, New Jersey, and said, "I'm a hijacker. I was trained in Pakistan, we're here to. I'm with the team. We're going to hijack your 747s. We're going to crash them," and so they gave him a couple of lie detector tests, determined he was telling the truth, reported him to Washington, D.C. Immediately, Washington had him deported. He was from England, living there, so they sent him back to England. And then after 9/11, he was contacted by some reporters who said, the thing I don't understand, I turned myself in, I told them the attack was coming, I told them I'd been trained in Pakistan, I've never been asked where the training camp was in Pakistan. Well, I think the only logical explanation is they knew where the training camp was in Pakistan. Why didn't they try to pick up the other hijackers? I think they knew who the other hijackers were. I think we're seeing something being played out which is so evil. Now, because I think there are people who hate America. And the reason we don't close our borders is because they want to do away with American sovereignty. They want to merge us with Mexico. They want to merge us into a one-world government. But they're going to have to destroy America first. And I think they're doing a pretty good job of it. Financially, morally, spiritually, and probably eventually the destruction of the whole infrastructure of our nation.
I got to tell you the truth. 2 years ago, I would have said that what you're saying is crazy. It's paranoia.
And you're paranoid when you imagine people are against
I'm
you.
Now, listen to me. Now, right now, Dr. Stan, I'm speaking to you. I've looked into this as much as any man can. I have a PhD. I know research. I've studied foreign languages for years and years and years. I know how to document things. I know what's true and what's fabricated. What you're saying right now, like things that I would have believed to be crazy 2 years ago, I have to say amen to.
But of course, you can't understand unless you understand the spiritual forces that are energizing these people. That, of course, is.
But why the forces within our government? Things that are very pressing, like this thing in Bakersfield, California, right now. Shukra Jama, the number one FBI said, be on the lookout for him. There's a $5 million reward on his head. I know where he is myself right now. I reported it to the authorities, and as of yet, nothing has been done. I can't, for the life of me, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's sort of like, why can't we find Osama bin Laden? I know of it.
He's in the Valley of Deer, and the Girl Scout troop could find him.
Of course they do, and because I remember there's a congressman in Southern California I've heard talk, and he told me that before 9/11, they knew exactly where Osama bin Laden was, and they reported him, when he was in Afghanistan. They reported him to the government. And the government was not the least bit interested in apprehending Osama bin Laden, despite the fact he declared war on America in 1996. Again, in 1998, he was involved in, the bombing in Aden in 92 and the Black Hawk Down incident in 94. And, they knew he hated America, and all of these things were going to come to pass. And they absolutely refused to try to take him out. And you have to ask yourself, why? Because it doesn't make sense logically.
Well, what you're saying is absolutely the truth. Even in the final days of the Clinton administration, the Taliban offered to turn Osama bin Laden over.
And I think that's so important. The Mullah Omar would have turned Osama bin Laden
absolutely.
Over to the United States, and we wouldn't take him. Why?
You're asking the wrong guy, because that's the question of tonight. Why?
Well, I think that there are powerful spiritual forces at work, and I really believe that they, many times people do things without ever even understanding them. And I get that from reading material that's put out by certain Luciferian organizations, and I will actually send you a copy of my pamphlets on the occult hierarchy, which I simply take what they say and how they're able to control people. who do not even realize they're under control, but will do totally illogical things. So off the air, I'll get that information to you. And I'll put the pitch in for our listeners. Hope they don't want to get this set of pamphlets. It's back to the possibility that there are nuclear devices here in America. If you set up a couple of nuclear devices in America, you would totally disrupt our economy. Now, there is a plan, and you discuss it in your book, to strike 7 American cities. Would you want to develop that idea?
Well, that idea was discovered from the laptop of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed Pakistan in March of 2003. It was called the American Hiroshima. It's a plan to detonate at least 7 tactical nukes simultaneously. But Bin Laden believes that in our own Qatar, so since we develop nuclear weapons should be used against us. This is the old Islamic idea of parity. And he is killing a minimum of 4 million Americans. He can't do that with a chemical weapon or a biological weapon. He can only do that with nukes.
And that, of course, is reprisal for all the people who were killed in Iraq because of our embargo there?
Well, and because of our invasion of Muslim lands, you know, going back to Somalia and Iraq, of course, and he intends to fire in Afghanistan, of course, that invasion, because of the civilians and the soldiers that were these invasions.
And my understanding is, of course, that he has to actually get permission from someone of the Imams or someone to use nuclear weapons against America. When did that come through?
That came through in 2004. There's an imam, I think his name was Nir, and he's a Sunni, naturally Sunni imam in Saudi Arabia. He issued a fatwa to, this was carried on 60 Minutes, by the way, and by CBS. He issued a fatwa, and in it he said that not 4 million Americans, but 10 million Americans must die for the sake of our sins in the past.
Well, my understanding is that the Muslim law requires that before you attack an enemy, you offer him a truce. And, of course, some people had commented that just a few months ago, or probably within a month or so, why Osama had actually sent a message to President Bush and then offered a truce. Is there any truth to that, they offered a truce before the attack?
Not the Sunnis. You know, if you go through the Sunni book of laws and you go through either the Hadith or the Quran, you won't find that. That's a Shia idea. And that's, once again, it brings us back to this idea of the Mahdi. The idea that you have to offer truce before an invasion is a Shia idea. It's not inherent among the Sunnis at all.
And of course, is basically a Sunni.
Oh, yeah.
And yet he seems to be working very closely with the Shias as well, isn't he?
Exactly. As a matter of fact, the leading Al-Qaeda operatives right now are in Iran. I mean, they have been Bora, including Osama bin Laden's son.
And I think that really what we're doing is uniting the Sunnis and the Shias now. Certainly, I think that there's probably a lot of problems there in Iraq between the two components. But when you start getting into the Al-Qaeda, it would involve both Shia and Sunni bound together by the common hatred of America?
Exactly. Do you know, Dr. Stan, Al-Qaeda, in the guy who formed Al-Qaeda, his name was Ayyub. Okay, he was the one who came up with the idea. And when Al-Qaeda was formed in Afghanistan, really in Pakistan, at the close of the Afghan War with the Soviets, going back into 1989, when it was formed, there were 4 Egyptians, Zawahiri and company, present. But there were, of the others who were present, the 11 others, 5 of them were Iraqis. And guess what they were? They were Kurds. Al-Qaeda right now is operating among the Kurdish faction in Iraq. And the Kurds right now, which is even more remarkable, are the ruling faction. But you're going to find, if you look at Al-Qaeda, and you look at Ayyub, and you find he's a leading factor right now in Iraq. He's the founder of Al-Qaeda.
Well, we're in for some very, very difficult times, and we could go on for another hour, but we're not going to be able to. Our guest this evening is Paul Williams. His books, well, we carry them, The Osama Connection, Osama's Revenge, and The Al-Qaeda Connection. And, Paul, hang on just a minute, and then we'll let you go. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and so let's talk perhaps a little bit about the spiritual aspect of what's going on, because I know I was very pleased to realize that you were coming from an evangelical Christian point of view. How do you see this from the spiritual point of view, devoid of anything logical, because so much of what's going on today really doesn't make sense? How do you look upon it from the spiritual point of view?
Well, you, Dr. Stan, the only thing that makes sense is if you are a Christian. And you realize that the prophecy, even going back to the prophet Ezekiel and going to Revelation, that even all that come to fruition, including the words of our Lord. You know, it's unbelievable but true that we have seen in our own lifetime the revitalization and renewal of Israel, the emergence of Israel from the ashes. We have seen the emergence of the opposing force and of virulent Islam rising against that. We have seen the signs and of the end times. We see it on a daily basis, and I think the only way it does make sense is if you are a Christian and a believer. And if you are not a Christian and a believer, then my one advice to you is not to buy my books, but to pick up the good book. And to come to terms with Jesus Christ, because he's the only one that can give you salvation from the days that are going to be, that lie ahead for all of us. And he's the only one that can give your life meaning. And at the end of it, guess what? We win. We win because we are victorious and we are assured of that fact as Christians. And my daughter right now is in Washington, D.C., and she's attending school there, and of course, every time I get news of new developments concerning Al-Qaeda, you know, I immediately am very, very concerned about her, but she's a believing Christian, too.
Well, it's all we really can do at this time. Right. And recognize we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on the political, ideological, cultural battlefield, but also now in the bloodied sands of the Middle East. Paul, thank you so very much, and I'll give you a call and get your address and send you a couple of my that they're very profound. They're nowhere near as profound as yours are, but they deal with the fact of what's going on and the fact that there really are some secret organizations out there. And since we read their publications and they tell what they're doing, where we're going, why, it, of course, helps me then to project these ideas to our listeners. So thank you so very much for staying up late at night to be with us. And we'll look forward to talking to you again.
You're a wonderful person, Dr. Good night. I admire you very much.
God bless. Bye-bye.
God bless you, too.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I'm sorry our listeners didn't get a chance to hear our conversation during the break, but Paul is a believing Christian, and his plea was, don't buy my books, get the Bible and read it through. And it will help you as you read the prophecies of the ancient scribes to realize, of course, that we live in the most amazing times when Israel has been already replaced there and the Holy Land has been gone for almost 2,000 years. And now we see the uniting of the descendants of Ishmael in preparation for a great conflict, which is actually in the process of being played out. So certainly I agree totally. This is a spiritual battle, and it's so important that our listeners understand that. And if you have any questions, you can always call me at our number, and I'll be glad to talk to you. If you're not a Christian, why, you certainly better reconsider what's going on, because we're moving into very, very difficult times. Well, this is the time I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we look to you out there to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day, and then on a weekend program as well, and by shortwave and internet and by satellite and on radio stations somewhere 5 hours a day, and trying to make people understand that America is at its gravest time in all history. and we are moving rapidly towards a war in the Middle East. How soon? I have no idea. We'll just have to see how the story unfolds. But begin preparing, certainly physically and financially, but mostly spiritually, for the difficult times that lie ahead. So then, of course, we hope many of you would want to get our little pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. The three pamphlets made up of a series of newsletters. Now, you can get them all up on the Internet, and you're welcome to go to our website of RadioLiberty.com and pull down on my articles dealing with the occult hierarchy and secret societies. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really are secret societies in America. Not one, but dozens of them here in America and throughout the world. And the premier of Iran, the president of Iran, belongs to an Iranian secret society that believes that you're not going to be able to bring the 12th Imam back, who will be the Mahdi, or who will precede the Mahdi, until there are a catastrophic and total destructive times, and they intend to bring this about. It's the most amazing story. There are all sorts of secret societies out there that most of you have never heard of, but they all have a common denominator, and they all work towards bringing us towards the New World Order, the One World Government, and the New World Religion, and the destruction of Christianity. When you understand the effort against Christianity, there's a conspiracy against Christianity, lots begins to make sense. You need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to put some the occult hierarchy. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, where you can listen to our programs on the Internet 3 hours a day directly and indirectly on another couple of hours a day. Encourage others to listen to the program. Copy our newsletters. Get them duplicated. Get our new our videos and DVDs and help us to spread the word. And then pray for America. Pray for revival, because if America doesn't turn back to God, God won't bless this nation. And lastly, please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.